Education Minister Dan Tehan will meet with university vice-chancellors today amid warnings that Australia's China debate is taking on undertones of the White Australia policy. The claim has been made by University of Sydney vice-chancellor Michael Spence, who's defended his university's reliance on the fees paid by Chinese international students. Today's meeting in Brisbane will look at concerns over foreign influence at Australian universities and review a new plan to deal with cyber threats. Michael Spence is the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Sydney. He's in the studio with me this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
The White Australia policy restricted immigration among non-British migrants to Australia. It was overtly racist. Is it fair to compare the conversation about China and Chinese influence in our universities today with that policy?
So my comments about the White Australia policy were a two-second moment in an hour-long interview with a journalist.
It's always
not
the
necessarily the headline I would have picked, but I think the important point is that there isn't a conversation at the moment. There are really two conversations. There's the perfectly sensible conversation about how we protect Australia's national interests, about how we engage with our largest and most economically powerful neighbour. And that's a very important conversation and one that's being perfectly reasonably had. The other is a slightly hysterical conversation that goes very easily from the Chinese Communist Party to everything that goes on in China, you know, sweeps up things like the very important work we do in cancer research with Chinese universities, to then sort of things Chinese more generally. And both our international students from China, but more importantly, our domestic students of Chinese and even of other East Asian origin, because let's remember 40% of our domestic undergraduates speak a language other than English at home, they tell us that sometimes that slightly more hysterical conversation becomes very uncomfortable for them. And I think we need to make sure that we're having the sensible conversation about Australia's strategic interests without, as it were, sweeping up everything vaguely Chinese in the process.
So what falls into the category of something comparable to the White Australia policy, in your view?
I think that the slightly hysterical conversation that sweeps up everything Chinese...
But can you think of a specific example?
...may have echoes of... There are moments in this conversation where we talk in generalities about the Chinese and as if every one of our Chinese students is a spy, for Pete's sake, whereas most of them are coming to Australia for an education. They're the product of hardworking Chinese families who are investing their life savings. And part of what happens when they're here is they have all sorts of conversations about China's place in the world, about what goes on in China, that opens their minds, that encourages them to think, that does exactly what a good Australian education does for Australian undergraduates.
Do you think an MP comparing the rise of China with the rise of Nazi Germany falls into that category of slightly hysterical, sweeping?
I think that was a very unhelpful thing for that MP to say.
But is it, let's be honest, is that the kind of thing that you're talking about? Because that so shapes the conversation that we are having about China and Australia.
Yes. So, yes, I think that is at the more unhelpful end. And, you know, I fully defend the right of that MP to make those comments. That's the beauty of a democracy. Just as we have on our campus every shade of opinion about just about everything, including China. But I think that was at the unhelpful end of the things that have been said.
I think all our listeners this morning know the history of funding for the tertiary sector in Australia. It's a reality that we all now live with. Do you think your university is now too reliant on Chinese students for the money that you take?
So, my university has students from 140 countries. That's a really important thing to remember, not least because of those 140 countries, not many of them share the political values that we have. So, for example, we have students from countries where the rights of LGBTIQ students are not respected, and we have to think about how to navigate that. So they come from 140 countries, and yes, because of successive Australian government's policy in relation to research funding, if we want to remain world-class in terms of the research contribution that we make to Australia and more generally, we are dependent upon international student fees. But that's not new financial risk that all of a sudden has crept up on us in the last 5 minutes, that's something that we've been managing over a period of time. And of course, we have plans for what to deal with if the whole international student market shrinks, or if a particular country withdraws from sending students to Australia, or whatever it might be. So it's a responsibly managed financial risk. But much more importantly, our domestic students, who are already an incredibly diverse bunch, get to operate on a campus where ideas are coming from all over the world, where they're being prepared for international careers, where they're being prepared for active participation in a multicultural society. Their eyes are opened by being in a place where Australia meets the world and the world meets Australia. And that's incredibly exciting. And that's one of the reasons why the percentage of international students on a campus is one of the things used by the international ranking agencies to measure the quality of a university.
But let's talk about what you mean by all over the world. What proportion of the student population at Sydney University are Chinese international students?
Yeah, exactly the proportion that you would expect, given the number of Chinese students that make up a part of the internationally mobile group of students. So about 25% of our students come from the PRC.
A quarter of the students at Sydney University.
Yeah, that's right. They're about a quarter of the people on the globe, so that's not surprising.
So you think that's an appropriate proportion?
Yes, I think that that's a reasonable proportion. And as every parent who is making sure that their young person is being taught Mandarin at the moment knows, engagement with China is going to be important to Australia's future, and therefore giving the other three quarters of students the opportunity to mix with students from China is incredibly important. But so too is our opportunity to build friendships for Australia in our most powerful local neighbour. You know, when you go to one of our alumni events in China, it's like an Australia Day rally. We are making friends for our country. That's a great thing to be doing.
But this brings me back to the question that I asked you earlier on, which I'm not sure I got an answer to, and that is whether you have become too reliant on the funds that you get from Chinese international students. I think about 35% of your total revenue comes from international students. Mm-hmm. You're saying that a quarter of your total student population comes from China. I mean, without them, you wouldn't be operating the kind of university that you're operating. We've got to be honest about that.
So I think that's a really important point. And the phrase there that I'd really like to pick out is the kind of university you're operating. So we are very lucky to be a university ranked, depending upon how you count, in the top 0.5% or 1% of universities in the world. That means that we are producing research, medical research, research in engineering, research in the social sciences that directly contributes to the prosperity of Australia and that makes a contribution more globally. Now, at the moment, given Australian research funding, that's only possible because of international student fees. We could become a kind of superannuated high school, for that is a place that doesn't create new knowledge and skills and transmit them, but just transmits knowledge and skills created elsewhere. We could become that, and then we would be less reliant upon international student fees. But I don't think that that would be us doing our job for Australia.
Is there a point at which the Chinese population of students is too great, a proportion of the total student number?
Yeah, I think we are at about the limit at the moment, and certainly our efforts at the moment are on diversifying our international student population in terms of the numbers of students coming from countries such as India.
So 25% is about the limit.
I think that's about the limit.
The challenge, though, with India is that there just isn't the total number of people that are sort of entering that middle class belt, if you like, that can afford to go and study overseas. Is that a realistic alternative?
So India is a challenge, and it's going to be a slow grow. But China was a slow grow. Remember that in 1979 we had 9 students come from the PRC, although in fact the University of Sydney had been receiving students from China from the very beginning of the 20th century, so it's quite a tradition. The problem with India is there's historically been a bit of a prejudice. Indian students of quality have preferred to go to the US for medicine and science, and to Australia, to the UK for law and the humanities. But What's been interesting over about the last 10 years is that India is becoming more globally confident, and Indian students in the middle class are looking for the best education globally. And increasingly, many families are deciding that that's in Australia. Now, there will be a limit. It's not going to be tomorrow that we have the same number of Indian students as Chinese students, but that's a market that we're growing.
You're meeting with the Federal Minister, Dan Tehan, later today. When we spoke to him last week about these conversations, he talked about what the relationship would be with the intelligence and security sector and the Australian universities. And there needed to be a better ongoing conversation that he said would not be oversight. They would not be telling you what you can and can't do in terms of research partnerships. Universities have said to us, well, we're already talking to them all the time. What does policy change, what does policy framework look like in your mind that's going to satisfy the federal government and the intelligence community and the universities?
So look, it seems to me that to be important in talking about any regulatory framework to keep in mind the objective. And our objective is exactly 100% shared with the Australian government. That is, in areas where we have a genuine technical advantage, and that genuine technical advantage has a military application, then that technology should be kept for Australia, and it should be shared only, as it were, when the Australian government thinks that that's appropriate.
Well, what if it's not a clear military advantage and it might just involve the monitoring of a population, for example?
Well, I think what you have to do is be able to balance our being a university and contributing to the general intellectual growth of humanity and clear military technologies. Otherwise, it just gets silly.
Look, but that was a question about the grey area, and that's the problem that we've got, isn't it? That we might be helping the Chinese, for example, develop tools that might be used, for example, to suppress an ethnic minority.
So a kitchen knife has dual use. It's I can use it to butter my bread. I can use it to murder my wife. It doesn't mean that we ought not to be making kitchen knives.
So and totally okay for Australian universities to partner with the Chinese in developing them?
Kitchen knives?
Well, we're talking about things that are far more dangerous than that. I mean, you wouldn't develop a new knife in partnership with someone that you knew was going to murder their wife.
That's true. Every technology needs to be thought about carefully and in relation to these particular issues. And that's what we do. But most of our research with the Chinese, it's about wheat rust research. You know, two of the world's great epicentres for wheat rust research are the University of Sydney and the Northwest Agricultural College in Yangling. Should we not cooperate with them and feed the world? We have activities in paediatric cancer. Does it not matter if a Chinese kid dies of cancer any more than it matters if an Australian kid dies of cancer? We have work on how you build a strong and vibrant economy, on how you get livable cities, on how you get technologies that are sustainable, that are going to be important for the future of the planet, given the Chinese contribution to that issue and the Australian contribution to that issue, both technically and generally. These things are shared problems of humanity in our region, and we can't forget that in concern about the kitchen knives. Now, of course, in areas that have specific dual-use application that may be problematic, we need to have conversations with the intelligence services. And we are and we do. And the Defence Trade Controls legislation, for example, ensures that we have those conversations. The University of Sydney was actively involved in the formulation of that legislation to make sure that it balances academic freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of ideas, freedom to collaborate with the very best in the world, and Australia's legitimate security concerns in the region. This is a tough thing you can't do in radio grabs.
We've given you much more than a grab. We've given you about 15 minutes. Michael Spence, we appreciate your time this morning and we look forward to hearing what comes out of the meeting.
Thank you.
Michael Spence is the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Sydney.